Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Tom Meredith.
Well, good morning. This is Galesburg Live. Thanks for being with us here on this Saturday morning. In our first hour this morning, we're talking back to school in some respects. He's, for about a year now, been the president of Carl Sandburg College, took over for Lori Sundberg after she left, a native of Ireland. He spent quite a bit of time here in Illinois at Parkland College before here at Carl Sandburg College. And the school year, I would say the new school year, getting ready to start there as well. As we welcome in Dr. Seamus Riley. Seamus, good morning. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in with us here this morning. Well, you know, a little bit different with Carl Sandburg College. Of course, we talked with all the local superintendents of the local school districts, and they're all off for the summer, so to speak. A little bit different with Carl Sandburg College because you have a couple of different summer semesters that go on. But it's still the same in the fact that in that fall semester when that gets underway, it's kind of a renewal because you got a lot of new students coming in, those that you know that finished up with high school or whatever the case may be. So it's still kind of a new start to a new year either way.
Yeah, August is always regeneration. I mean, it's a time when you start again, everyone gets a fresh start. Many of our faculty are, even if they're teaching during the summer, they're not necessarily on campus during the summer, so we get to welcome them back. And there's always that excitement of the start of the new school year. And we've got lots of things that are going on and people reconnect, and it's always a good, energetic time.
Yeah, I know we talked a little while ago about you kind of finishing up your first year. Let's talk a little bit more about that first year here at Carl Sandburg College. And new to you being that you were at a different place, being at Carl Sandburg College, but not new to you in some of the things you've done in the past, especially working at the community college level.
Sure, no, of course, familiar with the community college, but absolutely new to the role. And so, you know, you think you know a lot about things, and then you get into this different perspective. And it's been a wonderful year. It's been a fantastic year at Carl Sandburg, a very busy year. It's been a fantastic year in Galesburg. I've really enjoyed living in Knox County. And I've also spent a lot of time in our district. I've gone to, I think, 9 of the 10 county board meetings to introduce myself to the county boards. I go down to Carthage, where we have a branch campus down there. I go down there once a month. And I've really enjoyed getting out and exploring the district and getting to know the district. And I suppose if I reflect back on it, you know, time does pass very quickly when you're in a new role. But every individual community college district is different in that it is responding to its own district needs. And so part of, even if the concept is the same and we're teaching the same kinds of classes, we're trying to solve different problems because we're trying to solve problems for the community and we're trying to advance the community. And depending on what the specific needs of the community are, the community college kind of pivots to face that. And so a lot of what I've been doing as well has been learning about our community and our district and our economics and the history of the area and trying to make some educated guesses about how we can begin to meet the need of our district and working with faculty and staff to achieve that.
You know, it's interesting, and I don't know that Carl Sandburg College is unique, and maybe it is, but the square mileage, and when you talk about the size of this district, you know, going all the way as far over as Carthage mm-hmm. and a little bit further and bordering the other community college districts in Blackhawk East, ICC, mm-hmm. Spoon River, and all the way even bordering, probably John Wood out of Quincy.
Correct.
Also. Yeah, yep. So it's quite a distance to cover. So some diversity in that you've got the population base being Galesburg, and then you've got a lot of different types of small communities, obviously a lot agricultural in nature, but just it's a pretty wide area that you're covering. So you're going to see some different things and different needs.
I think we're the third largest district in terms of square mileage in the state, maybe fourth. You know, it's interesting when you mention agriculture. I'm always amused. I've been in Illinois now for 29 years, and people sort of take agriculture as, oh, yeah, we've got agriculture. I had a conversation. We were driving over the Mercer County, and somebody mentioned, well, there was a lot of trucking companies I noticed on the way over here. And I was like, yes, because we're – all of the breadbasket of the world is in our backyard and we need to be able to transport it. And he's like, I never thought about that. The diversity of the district is fantastic. You know, you're in a very historical part of the state. I spent a lot of time on the road this summer and, you know, this you forget that this state was really developed along the rivers. and really in a way the state developed from the south up and from the north down. And then, frankly, that's the way the whole country developed, really, from the Great Lakes region. It developed sort of north to south. And you begin to understand the diversity of the communities and the individuality of the communities. And I think part of what attracts me to living in this region and about rural America in general is that there is a very specific reason why people live in the environment that they live in. It's a wonderfully beautiful landscape, even if it doesn't have mountains in it necessarily. And each individual small town is incredibly proud of its heritage and the work that they've done. And I'm an historian and English major in my academic career. And so that's very attractive to me. And, you know, I think you can't really move forward without paying attention to where you come from. And so, you know, at the end of the day, for me and for everybody else, you want to live the highest quality life you can. And living in a rural America provides a very high level of quality of life in terms of the people, the things that you can achieve on a daily basis, the ease at which you can move around your community, and frankly, the friendliness of the community. And I mean, for me in this role, it's always really interesting. I've always been very well known, and it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. You sort of can't go anywhere, but I literally can't go anywhere now because everybody, which is good. It's great, but but everybody knows me, and that's a great thing. But it's really puts in perspective the how friendly people are. Well, people will come up because they know who I am. I don't know who they are, and they'll introduce themselves or they'll say hi. And it's just a great experience.
Dr. Seamus Riley, he's president of Carl Sandburg College, joining us here this morning. The new semester getting ready to get underway. You had mentioned, you know, kind of embracing the history. That's what we're all about, you know, where you live. And that's kind of the concept a little bit behind the community college programs, and Carl Sandburg being one of the very early ones here in the state of Illinois. This is kind of where it all started in Illinois. Up, what was it, Joliet? Yeah, mm-hmm. it was the first one. That's kind of the concept behind it, embracing, in your particular area, I guess it's embracing the history because that has a lot to do with whatever the community, the area's needs are.
Yes, and but also like back to 1947 with the Truman Commission, which really began the explosion of community colleges. First of all, there was the notion that everybody was entitled to an education. Many people don't realize that for a long time, not everybody could go to school. First of all, there wasn't an expectation that you went to school. Secondly, there were certain segments of our population that were just not allowed to. Most people don't realize that for a long, long time, into the 50s and 60s, that there were quotas for Jews, for example. You could only a certain amount of Jews could go to school.
Wow, I didn't know that one.
Right. And so the other part of that Truman Commission, which established this idea that learning for all, and this is in the wake of World War II when you had the GI Bill. There were two parts to it. One is that you wanted to be a very vibrant, well-educated society, and frankly, in particular, the Truman Commission was trying to protect against the onset of another world war. There was a real fear that there would be an immediate World War III because, remember, World War I had ended in 1918. World War II had ended begun in 1939. There wasn't exactly a lot of optimism that, you know, we wouldn't go straight into another one. So the notion of learning about other cultures, specifically, believe it or not, Russian culture, because they thought that was the next step. And the idea was that if we got to know each other and we understood our culture and we understood like languages, that we would be less inclined to go and get involved in those things. And the second part of it was, you know, the changing over in America to an industrial and manufacturing society. The great thing that America did during World War II was outmaneuvered every other country in the world in terms of industrial manufacture. Nobody in the world was able to do it. They took the Henry Ford model, they took the mechanization and industrialization and the model of the delivery system, and they just perfected it. And everybody worked in it. And they realized that, well, this is a huge advantage. And the third part of it was then making sure that as the more people were educated, the further we could advance in technology. And that's part of being the history of the growth. If you look at where this country was in 1920 and where it was in 1969 when they put a man on the moon, right? So an awful lot of that had to do with a real huge investment in education. And I suppose each community college sort of has that as its sort of nucleus, like this is what we're here to do. We're here to educate as many people and everybody. Everybody can come. We're open access. The second thing is we're going to provide a different opportunity, whether it be in a professional trade or whether it be in a transfer leading onto a baccalaureate degree or whether it just be for your development as a human being. So you want to learn a music, you want to learn music, or you want to take a literature class, or you want to learn another language. And so the community college really blends all of those aspects of what we were designed to do. And at the same time, I think increasingly and always played a huge role in advancing the economic status of each individual. The data show that the higher the level of education, the more money you're going to earn over your lifetime. And it's not all about necessarily the degree equating to the money, but it's about that notion that the more skills you have, the better off that you're going to be. And we, of course, react to the environment that we're in and trying to meet those needs.
It's kind of an interesting dynamic right now. We're going to take a break here quickly and touch on it coming back in that, you know, you talked about at one time there wasn't that expectation of education, even through high school in a lot of cases, let alone college and thinking about college, whether it was community college or going on to a four-year school. Then that kind of became the expectation in not all, but a lot of families that even if the parents hadn't gone, that you know, that their children would go on. That's how you get a good job. You go on and get that 4-year education. Now there's a little bit of pushback in some ways about that, which has to do with the cost of education. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and how the expectations in some ways have changed. But I think what a big role community colleges are going to play in all that. Talking with Dr. Seamus Riley, he's the president of Carl Sandburg College. We'll take a break, get an update on news coming up next. We'll come back with more. This is Galesburg Live.
Now, this week's host, Tom Meredith.
This is Galesburg Live. Our guest on our first hour this morning is Dr. Seamus Riley. He is the president of Carl Sandburg College, just finishing up his first year in that role. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about expectations and how things have changed, that there was one time not much of an expectation of continuing education, and for some not even going, you know, past maybe even the junior high level to even high school, but let alone college. But that those expectations kind of changed over the years. You mentioned the GI Bill and things like that, and it became more of an expectation. And a lot of families, whether the parents had gone to college or not, that, okay, this is what you do. You finish school, you go to college, that's how you get your job, whatever, you know, the level of education. Like you said, not even necessarily the degree, but it's having those other skills. Well, over the past few years, and I think a lot of it is due to what's happened with the cost of education secondarily skyrocketing. And so now you're getting this pushback, like, you know, I see this especially on social media, these memes saying like, oh, well, you should push trade school as hard as you push, you know, a 4-year college education or bachelor's degree. And that's why I think that the community colleges play such a key role, because in a way, in some cases, it is a trade school, and that there are particular programs, especially with an associate's, that you don't need to go on any further, and you can get, you know, find that job in that particular field with that certificate or with that associate's degree. The other thing, it's so much cheaper, like a trade school, that so in some ways, it in some ways benefits a community college in that pushback for people to push for, well, go into trades and labor because there's so many good jobs in that. Well, a lot of that you can find going to your community college, wherever it's at.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, for my own part, like my dad left school when he was 12 and he went straight to work with his dad. The reality is that the laws changed. And so you can't actually go to work now. And that's part of the issue, right? So the other piece is technology changed. And so we don't really need that many, what you would really call unskilled labor. And then you didn't have a really strong apprenticeship sort of model in this country. So people didn't sort of, you know, go out at 15 and spend 5 years and then become apprentices and then become master journeymen. So you're right in that community colleges have always filled that role of being the technical and applied learning piece, right? We always have had these, whether it be in auto mechanic or whether it be in electrical programs or whether it be in applied learning pieces. But you know, as I wrote in the Register Mail and in the winter, you know, you can't divorce anymore. You can't divorce that, oh, I work with my hands, from critical thinking skills. It simply doesn't apply. You know, part of the reason, even in sort of factory environments, I mean, you're asking people to work with $5 million pieces of equipment, and they need to be able to think on their feet, and they need to be able to critically think. And it's not just a mechanization piece. And the other piece is that what has happened, as we all know, and I mean, we're sitting in a radio station studio that is completely different from what it was 25 years ago.
Absolutely.
And look how many skills you've had to learn in order to be able to do your job, which you didn't even need to know years ago. And we sort of fulfill, I think, that role. I think there's a danger, though, a little bit. I see some of these memes out there that say, like, $100,000 a year welder versus, like, you know, $60,000. And I get all that. You know, I mean, it's important. But, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that people need to be aware of. One is that, you know, you'd have to work an awful lot of hours as a welder to make $100,000 a year. And the second thing is that, you know, Carl Sandburg's father worked as a blacksmith in a blacksmith's shop, actually. His job was to hit a piece of iron with a hammer every 30 seconds. And Carl Sandburg describes his father's aging every day as he watched them. And I mean, I've done physical labor. I've worked as a on construction. I've worked as a carpenter. My dad wanted me to go to school because he knew what it had done to his body and over 40, 50 years. And he didn't think that that was necessarily always the greatest thing. And the other piece of it as well, I think, is that is a changing approach to the notion of working with your hands, which I'm a firm believer in. And that is, I think a lot of us have allowed our own kids not to do that, not to get their hands dirty, not to work in the yard, not to fix the lawnmower. And at the same time, especially frankly for males, we need that tactile engagement, and we need to be able to do it. And so I find a lot of people who are white collar workers wanting to come back and learn how to become artists or sculptors or electricians or welders, because they want to be able to do something practical. So I don't think it's an either or. As I tell my own children, I say, you know, acquire as many skills as you can. And it doesn't matter to me whether they're high end scientific skills or whether they're practical skills like, you know, welding or working with your hands and making woodwork. I think those are important. I will say that we have a crisis in this country with regard to labor, and that is in the skilled trades, in plumbers and electricians and carpenters. And in some of the major cities in this country, you cannot get people. You can't get anything done because there just simply are not enough people. And I think it's important that we begin to figure out ways to meet that. And part of what we're doing at Sandburg is looking at ways in which we can be part of embryonic apprenticeship pieces, where we're working closely with WIOA to see, like, where is the critical need? So, for example, in industrial maintenance, and can we work with an organization or a company, and can we identify a young person who can go in and do that job, and can we support them as they're going through the job? Now, I'm a firm believer that we should not stop education. I want a person to go in and become an industrial maintenance person, but then I want them to continue to apply those skills, because the higher the level of training and skill development that we do for our workforce, the better a workforce we're going to be. I'm meeting employers who are saying, you know, I could expand, but I don't have the workforce. Yeah. And let's be honest about it, Tom, you know, we don't all jump up and down for joy if our 15-year-old son says, you know, I'd love to become an electrician, Dad. Now, in my case, that happened to me, and I was like, go for it. You know, become a woodworker. That's an honorable trade. There's nothing wrong with that. And it goes back to the concept in my mind of, like, what's the quality of life and what's the impact you're going to get? And if you love to do it, then go ahead and do it. But I think you're right. There has been this sort of, I call it the commodification of education, where, you know, we talk about schools now like we talk about cars. Oh, my kid's going here as opposed to right. Your kid's going, oh, you're my own, you know, my own family sometimes say, oh, your kids go to community college. I'm like, yeah, I think it's the greatest place in the world. I think everybody should go. And not just because I work there, but because the quality of the faculty, the engagement with the students, the opportunity to explore and develop things, what I was telling students at Sandburg last night. So there is a balance. And I think we're not either or. We're both. And Sandberg is committed to making sure that we're providing all aspects of it. I will tell you something else about what's happening, interestingly, in education is I get more and more students who are graduating from universities who are coming back to me and say, now I want to go back to community college and learn some other stuff. And I think part of what I think is the vision, my vision of the community college is that we're the place where everybody's going to go to school all the time, whether you're 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, that you're going to come back and sort of learn a new skill and keep up and just to keep your brain active. And I think that's hugely important.
I know somebody, in fact, it's been a while ago, somebody that worked here part-time. This has been back, you know, when I first started here back in the late 80s, had gotten his degree, I don't remember what end, from Western, might have been in communications, ended up after that, was working here part-time, couldn't find anything, went back and went through the computer programming program mm-hmm. and finished that up, his associates, and started working at State Farm as a programmer and has had a really good career.
You know, I think the history of this the last 50 years has been that you got a job and you stayed in it for 30 years. And I think everybody is aware, if they're not, they should be, that that's not the mentality of young people anymore. The idea is I want to do something for 3 or 4 or 5 years. I want to do something else. I want to learn another skill. I want to move to another city. I want to keep learning new things. And then frankly, like, you know, the rate of change in technology, you know, from like 1980 to 1990, from 1990 to 2000, but the rate of change from 2010 till today, if you just think about your daily things, I mean, the things, what you can do with your cell phone now that you couldn't do back then, what you can do with your, you know, you can buy your groceries with your cell phone, you can access TV in a way, you know, we all watch TV in our phones because we've got the Netflix app on our phone. Yeah. I mean,
the radio through your phone, whatever. Yeah.
I listen to my local Irish radio station there, on my phone in Galesburg, Illinois.
Yep, there you go.
So, I mean, how do we, and I think community colleges are the place where we can help people keep up with that rate of change.
Yeah. Well, you talked about the change, you know, with the labor and those type of jobs. Like, but as you touched on, you still need the critical thinking skills. It doesn't matter if it's a plumber or electrician, you still need the critical thinking skills. And then where I think another part of the community college comes into play, there's like, okay, I went through the apprenticeship. I'm going to be a plumber now. Well, maybe someday I want to have my own business. Well, again, business classes. You can't just like, okay, I'm going to do it. Like, well, now what? What do I do? You know, how do I do this? How to, you know, keep my ledger? These type of things. So there's a lot of places where the community college plays a role in those types of jobs too.
So the best example of that I can think of, and you're absolutely right, and I really take umbrage at people who say, well, you know, carpenter, you don't need any skills. My dad would not take kindly to that.
How do you measure something? You need to know.
Well, my old plumber, one time he was telling me he had a young kid working with him and he asked him to cut a length of pipe. And so the kid cut the length of pipe and then he said, how am I going to get it up the wall? He said, now I'm going to have to add a coupling here and I'm going to have to, you know, that's critical thinking.
Yeah.
And if you don't think it's important, then try to build something and see what happens. But let's use the example of agriculture, which has probably been the industry that has probably had the most change over the last 50 or 60 years and probably embraced change quicker than any other industry. You know, we're in the process of just finalizing getting a new ag certificate, and we've got some interesting sort of classes in there. But my focus is really going to be on when I talk to farmers and they say, you know, we really need help with data management. We really need help in figuring ways in which we can understand and compile the data coming out of our tractors and the satellite GIS information that we're getting. So that's agriculture. We're still growing corn and soybeans, but the margins are so small that the technology needed is really scientific technology. It's certainly data they're using, but they're also needing to understand how to use QuickBooks, how to make calculations, how to make sure that they're getting the best possible price in a market that is really very difficult, to say the least. And so then as I look at sort of like the skills needed in agriculture, they're really science skills and they're technology and data assessment. And so, you know, part of what we're trying to do is sort of keep pace with that. And some of this is going to be for individual current working farmers who are in the field, who already are employed working as farmers, and providing those opportunities through continuing education so that they can come in and get that information quickly and apply it immediately. I think sometimes the difficulty in all education is like you learn something that's very interesting, but how does it apply to your life? And I think the great gift of the community college is that an awful lot of the work that we do is directly applicable. And so the way in which we teach our subjects is to really prepare students to apply them to real life situations. And there's a real value in that. There's a real value in the theory as well. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of, you know, to just to use agriculture as an example, that's one of the ways in which I think we begin to see the intersection of the community college, the new technology, and ways in which we can flip and flex to begin to meet that need.
Dr. Seamus Riley, president of Carl Sandburg College, joining us here this morning. This is Galesburg Live. We'll take a quick break and come back with more. Good morning. This is Galesburg Live. I'm Tom Meredith, your host this morning. Our guest in our first hour is the president of Carl Sandburg College, Dr. Seamus Riley. I've been talking about a lot of the things coming up, the ag program for one, the certificate program you're working on. When will the fall semester winter classes actually start?
August 19th. So, we're just a couple of days away.
Yeah, right? Not too far off that you'll be getting back into the swing of things. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your background, get away from Carl Sandburg College a little bit to people that may not. I know there's not that many people that don't know you, which is a good thing. I mean, that's being that transparency, being out in the community and people getting to meet you and kind of get to know what goes on at Carl Sandburg College is a good thing. But for those that don't, they may or may not have noticed you have just a little bit of an accent that you grew up in Ireland. Talk a little bit about your background and how you came to end up at Carl Sandburg College.
Sure, yeah. I grew up in a small town called Navan, N-A-V-A-N. It's the only palindrome in Western Europe. And actually, ironically, a town very like Galesburg in many ways. I grew up right next to the railroad tracks. There was an aqueduct bridge right by my house. My town was it's a little older than Galesburg. It got its charter from Henry II in 1179.
Just a little bit older.
But it was an interesting town. It was a market town, and it was also a town that really reacted to multiple changes in industry. And so for a long time, it began really in the main industrial ages, the 17th century, is a wool sort of provider using the river transportation. And then it became a logging town. Then it became a furniture manufacturing town. Then it became a major carpet manufacturer. And so these were all sort of like, okay, we have the resources. Oh, wait, we'll pivot and change, or a new industry comes into town. And then finally, I suppose the major biggest change in my lifetime was in 1974. They found the biggest lead and zinc mine in Europe, second biggest underneath the town. And so we became a mining town. And the population doubled from 7,500 to 15,000 in about 4 years.
Wow.
And people who had, it was a very interesting town in that people who were born in Navan tended to live in Navan, and almost nobody came out from outside. And suddenly we were, everybody was from outside. And so it was a tremendous cultural change. But again, the major industries were manufacturing, mostly wood, furniture. So my dad was a carpenter, joiner, chair maker. A hospital, and then a mine. And so in many ways, Galesburg reminds me a lot of my hometown because it's the same feel. I knew everybody in town. I was related to half the people in town. I'm not related to half the people in Galesburg, but I know everybody, almost everybody in Galesburg. And then I went to university. I was a first-generation student. My dad had left school when he was 12. My mom left school when she was 15. My grandfather was a primary school teacher, a headmaster actually in a small country school. So when we had a day off from school, he used to drag us out to his school because he didn't believe kids should have a day off from school. And then he'd put us in the classroom that was a grade above that we were in, or two grades. And I remember you used to get slapped with wooden sticks in Ireland. Mm-hmm. So I remember being two grades up and missing a word in a spelling and getting slapped and thinking this is grossly unfair. So thus began my love for education. So I went through school, and like most kids, my dad got ill when I was a teenager, became essentially disabled, was unable to work. And so it was a very difficult time for me. And, you know, I came to the end of my high school and was going to be an actor, was in the first ever National Youth Theatre in Ireland. And then just there was nothing to do. I didn't have enough money to go to school. In Ireland, you had to get a certain academic credential, but you also had to get into the university. But then essentially you had to get double that to get scholarship money.
Wow.
And so I went back and repeated my leaving certificate, which was a 2-year course in 1 year. And then at the end of it, went to do study English and history at University College Dublin, which was founded by Cardinal Newman. And I was telling the incoming students at Sandberg last night, you know, I was the largest ever undergraduate first year class at University College Dublin, 2000 in 1984, and 1,000 went into second year. So the 50% failed. Actually, wow. 75% failed the summer exam. So it was a very, very, very difficult educational experience. But I enjoyed what I was doing, even though, like most students, I wasn't really sure where it was going to end up. And then I went on to do my master's and met my wife, who was from Peoria, Illinois. Small town story. Her cousin was my economics teacher in high school because her mom and dad are both from Ireland.
Oh, okay.
And so then moved to Spain for 2 years, was teaching in a private school there and working with local businesses, teaching local businesses. And then moved to the United States in 1990, came to Peoria, Illinois from Madrid, Spain, got married, and then went to the University of Illinois to do my PhD and ended up getting offered a job at Bradley University and Parkland College the same day. And I'd just fallen in love with community colleges. I believed that, you know, my whole goal is to try to help people, and I believed that in the community college system I could make a difference every single day. And I was really blessed to have been able to experience living in one place for 26 years. So I was able to see kids I'd coached as 9 or 10-year-olds who persisted in school because they wanted to come play soccer for me in college because I was the college coach. But then I got to see my graduates go on to become teachers and coaches and engineers and, you know, parents. And it was just a very fulfilling experience. And so I had committed completely 100% to community colleges, and that really is kind of like where it all kind of ties together.
Well, you mentioned soccer and coaching. You've coached at some pretty high level of soccer, haven't you, over the years?
Yeah, I worked for the state of Illinois, and I worked for the Illinois Youth Soccer Association, so I worked for the Olympic Development Program, and I coached at the college level at Parkland, coached at the high school level at Centennial, and then at the club level. And so, I got to I was telling one of the new Carl Sandburg students who was wearing a very unique English soccer jersey yesterday, Yeovil Town. I'm like, how do you know Yeovil Town? And he goes, oh, from playing FIFA. I said, I'll tell you my claim to fame is I coached a kid who ended up on that FIFA database.
Oh, wow.
He went on to become professional in Australia. So,
wow.
But yeah, no, so I coached that. And that was really a continuation, extension of my teaching, really.
Okay, was it hard growing up? I assume you called it football, or did you call it soccer?
Actually, most people don't realize this, but in Ireland, we always called it soccer.
Really? Okay.
Because there's a totally different game. There are Gaelic games or Irish games called Gaelic football and hurling. And okay. So you always said soccer to distinguish from Gaelic football. I'll tell you something else. Soccer was banned in Ireland.
Really?
Because of its association with England. And so when we were kids, there were very few really nice fields. Most of them were Gaelic football fields. And there was an old man used to beat us with a stick if he found us playing soccer on the Gaelic football field. So, it was a big deal. When I was starting off, the ban was still in place, which meant that if you played soccer, you were not allowed to play Gaelic football.
Wow. So the rest of Europe, that's more where the term football was.
Yeah, the football is the universal term.
Right, universal,
People will still refer to it in Ireland
as
football, but I always grew up with soccer as being a kind of a distinguishing feature.
Yeah. So what? Explain Gaelic football then.
Gaelic football is a 15 per side. You can catch the ball. You can run with it if you bounce it or kick it from your foot to your hand. I always thought it would be the absolute greatest game for Americans because it has all of the hand-eye coordination as well as the catching as well as the absolute rough and tumble. It is a very, very physical game. I encourage you, everybody, to go get on YouTube and look at Gaelic football.
So maybe similar to rugby or maybe even Australian rules football?
Australian rules was derived from Gaelic football.
Okay.
In fact, they just added rugby ball to it.
Okay, interesting. Well, see, I found things out I didn't know. Dr. Seamus Riley is the president of Carl Sandburg College, joining us here this morning on Galesburg Live. So classes for the new semester will start on the 19th, getting ready to go. Of course, a lot of great extracurricular stuff. You have all the fall sports starting, which is something that's been really great. Also, the sports teams and extracurriculars have been doing really, really well over the last few years. So it's fun and exciting time for you.
It's really incredible. There's a tremendous energy. I mean, we have fantastic faculty. We have some great new faculty starting off. We have excitement around our cybersecurity program, which is a new program. We've made some changes to the sort of teaching spaces. Our faculty are incredibly innovative. We have some really interesting things going on in virtual reality, where people are using virtual reality tools. For example, we have a speech teacher who's using that to students wearing goggles, giving their speech, and then are able to see whether or not they're looking left and right and center. And if they're using too many fill words, it shows up on the screen as they're watching it. Chris Barber in our criminal justice program has created a virtual reality space where students who are, you know, training in criminal justice, looking at what it's like to be on a streetscape, walking down as a police officer. I mean, it's basically like a video game, but it's got real application to it. And of course, our health professions folks in terms of our simulation lab and the work that they're doing. So very, very exciting time. And again, trying to meet the needs of our students and of our employers. And, very, very lucky to be at a campus that is a comprehensive community college. In other words, that we are focused on those extracurricular, on the academic successes, on the cultural experiences for our students. We have a very diverse campus. We have a lot of integration for all the groups so that we get good support at games. I mean, typically community colleges don't get an awful lot of student support, but our students are integrated and engaged with each other. It's a small enough space. It's that they see each other regularly, and we have a highly visible faculty and staff that are out there. So it's
And your student athletes are they've been good students as well. That's been the really good thing about your programs.
It's really important as a former coach. Yeah. I mean, I always address the students and I say, you're a student athlete.
Right.
And we all hope you make it as far as you can, your athletic endeavors, but your goal is to be a great student. And, yes, it bears... It's borne out by their successes in the classroom. And yes, while we certainly are very excited about their athletic achievements, for many of our students, athletics is a gateway into the education. And once they're in through that education gate, then they realize, wow, they're going to be able to do something special. They can always do athletics, but, their education is going to bring them further.
Absolutely. Dr. Seamus Riley, he is president of Carl Sandburg College. Of course, you can find out more information on their website. If you Google Carl Sandburg College, it'll pop right up, and you can look at the different programs, classes, and things, and get yourself registered. Again, the 19th, classes will start for the next semester. Seamus, thank you so much. Always appreciate taking time to talk with us.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Tom.